This week, we take a look at society's decline through perhaps one of the most influential platforms in our lives today, social media. Brother Greg Knott talks about this issue and how Freemasonry can bring society back together. Then we've got a brand new segment from Brother Matt Gallagher. In his segment on Practical Freemasonry, he talks about just what is Practical Freemasonry and some of the dangers of not knowing your audience. We'll wrap it up with an exploration of science. Just what is science? In Freemasonry, we have the seven liberal arts and sciences. In what context do we study them? And can science always be trusted? All this and more in this episode of Whence Came You. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 517. I want to thank our contributors, our fellows, producers, and legacy partners for bringing this Masonic education to everyone all over the world. If you're interested in figuring out how you can assist this program in bringing Masonic education to anyone interested in the royal art, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show. Alternatively, you can also check out any of the number of products that we offer. All of the proceeds go right back into producing Masonic education. Our thanks in advance. Now, in the news, not a lot going on, but something pretty cool. Up here at the Valley of Chicago, ancient accepted Scottish Rite, Northern Masonic jurisdiction, we are having an educational symposium. I was tasked earlier this year with compiling a list of potential speakers, getting in touch with them, and getting them to commit, and I've done this, and the Valley has moved on it. So, December 18th, the Double Eagle Con at the Scottish Rite Valley of Chicago will have an all-day educational event. Over the course of one day, we're going to have nine of the most prolific men in Freemasonry. Never before has a group of speakers really been assembled who've molded our awareness of Freemasonry in such significant ways. These men have made their indelible mark on not only our fraternity as a whole, but also the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. This education day will be packed with presentations, fellowship, and more. Now, I want to tell you all that this particular event is Scottish Rite related and is members only. Here are our keynote speakers, Michael R. Pohl, 32nd degree, KYCH. He will be joining us via Zoom. So think about this, though. The Zoom is going to be on a movie screen in a theater. So it's going to be awesome. We're going to have Joseph Wages, 32nd degree, will be there in person. Roberto M. Sanchez, 32nd degree, KCCH, will be there in person. We've got Stephen L. Harrison, 33rd degree and fellow of the Missouri Lodge of Research, will be there in person. We've got Chuck Dunning, 32nd degree, KCCH, will also be there in person. We've got S. Brent Morris, 33rd degree, PhD, will be there in person, I believe. We've also got Robert G. Davis, 33rd degree in Grand Cross. So Bob Davis will be there. You all know Bob. He's awesome. He will have been then the past Grand Master of Oklahoma. We've got Darren Lehner's 32nd degree, who will be there also. And coming in via Zoom also, Jeffrey Croteau, the Director of Library and Archives for the Scottish Rite Museum and Library in Lexington, Massachusetts. So this is going to be amazing, right? What you're going to get for your ticket is a continental breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Breakfast is and check-in will start at 7 a.m., and the speakers will start at 8 a.m. What day? December 18th. This is a Saturday. Again, members only. Business attire is recommended. The tickets, they have an early bird ticket price, $90. That's a steal, considering the list of speakers, plus you're getting three meals. However, after November 30th, tickets will jump up to $120. So here's the deal. Y'all need to head on over to tinyurl.com/DoubleEagleCon2021. DoubleEagleCon2021. And get your tickets as soon as possible. The Scottish Rite Cathedral is actually located in Bloomingdale, Illinois. and the website and everything will be right there on the Eventbrite page. I hope to see you all there. It's something that I spent a lot of time trying to organize and get in contact with these brothers, and they've all graciously agreed to come or to present. So I hope you guys all find some amazing value in this, because it is incredibly rare to have this kind of caliber of speakers all at one event. So if you have any questions about this event, I might be able to help you out on some of the topics or whatever that'll be presented. Keep in mind, it will all be Scottish Rite related. But if you have questions about reservations, tickets, or anything else, you'll want to reach out to the phone number on the Eventbrite page, which gets you in contact with the Scottish Rite Valley of Chicago directly. It's a very professional team. This is not something that you will email and never hear back from. The Valley of Chicago is very responsive. So, again, it's a one-day Masonic Education Symposium, December 18th, $90, 9 speakers, but if you wait too long, you're going to have to pay $120. So head on over there ASAP, get your ticket, and I'll put a link to the event in the show notes for you to click on. Our first piece comes from Gregory J. Knott, 33rd degree. He recently wrote a piece for the Midnight Freemasons that had some concern behind it, and I'd like to read that for you now. Where Are We Headed? By senior Midnight Freemason contributor Gregory J. Knott, 33rd degree. More than one article on this blog site has been written about our concerns about social media and the impact on society it is having today. For myself, these concerns have only deepened over time as I see what is happening on sites like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and the contribution to what I consider a sharp moral decline in our communities. The nearly unfiltered comments from people are continually full of vitriol and other demeaning comments to others. A recent 60 Minutes program featured Facebook whistleblower Francis Haugen, who disclosed damning evidence that Facebook is fully aware, because of their own research, of the damage being done to society, especially to our young people. I recently had a conversation with a college student, and we spoke about social media and the negative impacts it is having. I observed to her that at her age, 21, social media has essentially been in existence her entire life, and that is all her generation had known. We discussed her grandparents, who in their 80s are still very active, interacting with friends, attending card club, church, etc., as part of their social routine, but for friends her age, those are becoming increasingly rare types of activities. These types of changes and numerous others that I could list collectively contribute to the loss of social capital in our communities. In the small rural communities that I am part of, the loss of social capital is especially true. The service clubs, such as Lions and Kiwanis, the bowling alley that hosted the weekly bowling leagues, declining church attendance, volunteer fire departments that are struggling to fill their ranks, the closure of the local newspapers, and numerous other examples I could give, all have contributed to a decline in social capital. I clearly understand that things change over time, people's priorities change, new technologies come into being that change our lifestyles, but I am absolutely convinced that social media has accelerated those changes faster than we could have ever anticipated. Is Facebook solely to blame for the loss of social capital? Of course not, but Facebook has grown to such a size that it has become a monopoly for people's time and attention that has been monetized through the vast advertising network Facebook has created. Anxiety and mental health issues are on the rise. Conversations I have had with educators clearly point to social media as one of the primary causes, in their opinion, for the increased stress that young people are under. Again, these types of concerns are at the center of the Facebook whistleblower accusations. I am hopeful, though, that people are beginning to realize what we have been doing to ourselves. Numerous people I speak with are oftentimes close to shutting Facebook off and deleting their accounts. Facebook and Instagram both were offline for part of the day recently, and news accounts spoke about how people were talking face-to-face again, albeit for a short time. I haven't walked away from Facebook yet, as it is how I communicate with so many friends across the country, and especially my Masonic brethren. So, where are we headed as a society? I'm not looking to go back in time and hope for the return of the good old days. What I am hoping for is a great awakening again to the importance of community and the rebuilding of the social capital that strengthens humanity. Given this is a Masonic blog, I, of course, see where the local Masonic Lodge can play a key part in the rebuilding of social capital. It can't be done overnight, and may be done differently than in past generations, What we have is a set of values that build the character of the individual Mason. The Mason then goes back into the community and helps build it to be a better place for everyone. Society needs us. Society needs Freemasonry. Gregory J. Knott. I love this piece. I love social media also because of all of the interactions I have with my brothers across the world, the country, and let's be honest, it's really how we choose to communicate with a lot of these long-term relationships that we have, and connecting with old friends who we've long since parted ways with, you know, grade school friends and all of these kinds of things. But yes, Facebook has allowed people to show their true colors, in fact, and this has led to a interesting plot twist. Friends that you might have loved have now shown colors of political persuasions or moral values that you now despise, and as such now think less of those friends and have been able to argue with online and all of these kinds of things. So yeah, very, very weird time to be alive. But you know, being positive is in your control. You can choose to be positive. It's kind of a overly stated point that society needs Freemasonry, quote unquote, now more than ever. However, I really do like what Greg says here, the last line, society needs Freemasonry, not mankind, not all this stuff. Society. In our ritual, it says that God makes man dependent on one another. This means that it is unnatural. Not that that's always a bad thing, right? I don't want to fall victim to the logical fallacy of nature. But I will say that it is unnatural to go so long being isolated. This pandemic has caused not irreparable harm, but it definitely has left its mark on many people in a negative way. We've taken away some human connection, necessarily, and we're suffering the consequences of it now, and we're getting back to Masonic lodges, and brothers are refilling their oxytocin tanks, and it feels better. But society needs Freemasonry because we are a community of builders. Great people just tend to gravitate toward Freemasonry. It's not like Freemasons become great people. Great people just happen to be Masons, is the way that works. And those great people are great people in their communities. People who volunteer for the PTA. People who volunteer to run the book sale at the schools. People who volunteer their time or become aldermen or organize events around the local community needs. That's who we are. And a lot of that comes down to face-to-face social time. Sometimes it's an interesting concept to think about a Masonic Lodge having somebody on the local Chamber of Commerce, but I think they should also. Anyway, great piece. My question for the Craftsman Plus out there is, what is your lodge doing for its local community? What I'm hoping that you'll talk about here is not like, hey, we did a charity drive for XYZ and donated money. I'm more curious about civic engagement. What has Freemasonry done for your community in terms of engaging the community, bringing people together through social programs or learning or things that build us up, not necessarily charity? I look forward to reading your answers. You know, recently we just released on YouTube the video that we had with Brother Richard Dreyfuss, 32nd Degree, where we interviewed him about civics and Freemasonry. You all can check that out if you go to the website mls2026.com and click on videos. It's the video that's right up there on the website, first and foremost. And I think you'll enjoy that. But, you know, Brother Richard Dreyfuss is an expert on the topic and really speaks to the idea of civics in Freemasonry and our responsibility, because civics and society are tied together, and so is Freemasonry. Let's get into a new segment from Brother Matt Gallagher on practical Freemasonry. Let's check it out.
What is practical Freemasonry? An excerpt from the new book, Practical Freemasonry, by me, Matt Gallagher. I don't think I've ever met a Mason who hasn't, at some point, sat through a meeting or educational lecture and looked dazed and confused. But I don't mean confused in the way that they don't understand what the speaker is saying. We're all pretty smart. It takes a pretty esoteric paper to be indecipherable to the average Mason. Most times, the confusion I see is of wondering what any of what is being said has to do with us. My eye-opener was when a brother, a past master, gave a paper on alchemy, Apollo, the sun, and the phallus. I mean, what? Let me be clear. It may have been very good, very interesting information. I may have even thought it was well delivered if I was listening. But I wasn't, because from the moment he uttered the words alchemy, Apollo, sun, and phallus, I leaned forward in my mind to listen for what this has to do with me, and I did not hear it in the next line. At that point, I slipped into gnosis, or an altered state, in which I was no longer present in that room, but rather floating away into a world of my own making, which looked eerily like the dining room downstairs where Dave was making his famous spaghetti. So if you're reading this book to learn what d*** have to do with alchemy, I'm sorry to say I didn't catch it. The three levels of understanding. Most Masonic symbolism can be understood on three distinct levels: the axiomatic, the practical, and the esoteric. An axiomatic understanding of a symbol is what it tells you on the surface, and which can most conveniently be boiled down into common sayings. The 24-inch gauge, for instance, some may say, can be restated as early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. Because on the surface, the gauge is talking about time management. The plum is walk tall, and the square is always deal square with people, and so forth. These are valuable understandings because they're easy to internalize and easy to communicate. If anyone ever asks you for an elevator speech rundown on Masonic philosophy, telling them that we use symbols to impart valuable lessons on smoothing out our rough edges and treating everyone fairly and equally is a fairly good, rather appealing starting point. The problem is much lodge education never gets past this starting point. The simplicity of axioms is a double-edged sword because they've got no real depth to them. They're axiomatic lessons of our primary symbols, while reframed in an interesting thematic way, are not any different than the basic Occidental philosophies we've learned since we were kids. Be good. Okay, how? The brother asks. I don't know, just remember to be good when you're doing something cruddy. I guess, says the brother, and then goes on to ask if it's chilly night. It's so basic that once we've consumed the reframing, the lessons just sort of fade into the background of our minds, and cease to guide us any more than they did before we joined. Many Masons, seeing this problem and wanting to correct it, swing to the other side of the spectrum and dive into the deep end of esoteric. An esoteric understanding of symbolism is the 3D chess of philosophy. This Masonic symbol doesn't just mean X, but that X itself is a symbol for Y, and then even that Y is an allusion to an ancient Gnostic suppressed concept of Z, which touches upon cross-culturally similar concepts of dollar sign, ampersand, and whatever the at symbol is. First, let me say right off the bat that esotericism has a ton of educational value. It's essentially philosophical archaeology that exercises a creative mind, is fun in the right context, and can help a person connect different ideas that weave a tapestry of self-understanding that they can tear down from the wall, wrap themselves up, and warm themselves on emotionally dark nights. I love esoterica, but I'm not in love with esoterica, because I've seen too many eyes roll back into too many heads to appreciate it as a mainstream educational option. It's not. And that's fine. That hipster attitude is part of the appeal. Between bumper sticker philosophy and the Dead Sea Scrolls, a Masonic educational experience can be extremely frustrating and ultimately off-putting. It's no wonder why so many Masons are just here for the food. Relevant direction for modern men. Practical Freemasonry is an educational style that focuses on two things: relevance and action. The tenets and practices of Freemasonry are intended to be unchanging throughout the centuries, and I'm a supporter of this. But times change, people change, philosophy changes with it. The values don't have to change, but how people process the information and put it into practice necessarily changes, and most importantly, why something matters will change with the times. My favorite example of this is the Five Orders of Architecture, which is discussed in our second degree lectures, and I discuss more fully later in this book. When I first heard the Middle Chamber lecture, like everyone in my cohort, I was blasted with a fire hose of information that I couldn't possibly process. As I participated in later second degrees, I listened more and more, And eventually, when I tried and failed to learn the lecture myself, a lot of stuff started clicking. I loved the section on the five orders, which was both informative and eloquent. But why was it in here? Honestly, why was any of the middle chamber lecture in the lecture? But I specifically thought about the five orders, memorizing that section and repeating it back to myself over and over. Masons wrap their teaching in a blanket of architecture, so it had to mean something rather profound, didn't it? And I thought, and I connected the dots. And as you read later, I came up with some really interesting ideas that spoke to me. When I told them to others, those ideas spoke to them as well. Suddenly, the five orders and the rest of the topics in the middle chamber lecture reformed themselves into a pattern that had real themes that we could pick apart and learn from. A couple years later, I was driving back home from a Masonic event, going through the drive-thru of a Wendy's, and listening to an audiobook called The Philosophy of Masonry in Five Parts by Roscoe Pound, in which the author discussed William Preston, the Mason responsible for adding the five orders to the lecture. And he stated exactly what they symbolized. Nothing. I mean, there were probably some very clever Masonic reasons why he included them in the lecture, but the reason why Preston discussed them in such detail, as well as the five senses, etc., is because he just thought those were things that an educated man should know. In Preston's day, there was certainly an abundance of university-educated scholars in Freemasonry, but more and more, lodges were being filled by businessmen and other people who worked for a living. For some people, Masonic lectures might be the highest form of formal education they ever achieved. So Preston thought that a basic understanding of architecture, the human body, and the liberal arts and sciences were all things that an educated man should know. Today, the people we consider to be the most intelligent and cosmopolitan probably don't know a damn thing about classic architecture. And they don't have to. If Preston was to rewrite the lecture today, one wonders what he would have put into it. Maybe he would have discussed the basic principles of coding. If you went to a party today and started discussing the particulars of classic Roman and Greek architecture, they'd probably think you were a smug know-it-all and regather the party in the far corner of the room away from you. And yet, what are the things that the average person lacks today in a world where the entire sum of human knowledge fits into our pockets? Maybe things like morality and judgment, how to separate the noise from the important things in life, and learn how to make decisions? Maybe we need to learn what our place is in the world and how we can tell if we're succeeding. In practical Freemasonry, we operate from the belief that everything we're encountering is teaching us a lesson and exploring what that lesson may be. Even if we can't prove that that was the intent of that phrase or symbol, by extracting some sense that clicks with our heads, we grow. Everything teaches you a lesson, find out what it is. Philosophy in a bag is worth the bag. And I'll be honest, I've known plenty of people and plenty of Masons who talk a great game, but when it comes down to actually doing good things, they fall up short. I'll be even more honest, that guy has been me on more than one occasion. The simple fact is that we are not very good at being good. We're good at being self-interested, and when it's in our interest to act good, we do, and we think that's good enough. This isn't because we're secretly all terrible people. It's because being self-interested is the thing in which we have the most practice. Practical Freemasonry is chiefly about practicing Freemasonry, which means that we sometimes need to laser focus on what any particular lesson is asking us to do. It's not enough to know we have to treat people fairly and equally. Of course, we all know we have to treat people fairly and equally. It's not enough to get occasional visual or audible reminders to fix our flaws. Some of us, through our failures, are constantly reminded that we need to fix our flaws. But what am I supposed to do about it, we ask ourselves. What is being asked of you? What changes are you supposed to make in your behavior? What is even the first step? Almost universally, these questions go unanswered in a Masonic lodge. After all, you should have been a good person when you were let in, right? So you should already know what to do. No, you shouldn't. People usually don't know what to do to improve their characters. And it's rarely talked about on an instructional level. In practical Freemasonry, we ask, what does this symbol mean? What does it mean to me? And what is it telling me to do or how to behave? Everything tells you to do something. Find out what it is. I'm Matt Gallagher for the Whence Came You podcast.
All right, a big thanks goes out to Matt Gallagher for his awesome segments in Practical Freemasonry. This, of course, was the first one that was an excerpt from the new book which is available right now. We'll have a link back to the book in the show notes. For our Craftsman Plus, I'd love to ask you, what part in Freemasonry, when looked at from a practical level, is just extra fluff that might not be relevant to today? Not unlike what Brother Matt has talked about with the orders of architecture. I look forward to your thoughts and perhaps some healthy debate.
Our next educational piece is one that I had an interest in because I feel like there's a disparity or a pick a camp or whatever. I wanted to talk a little bit about science as a thing, as a study. So where will we go with this? Let's start with the etymology of the word science. Etymology is the history of a word. So science comes to us from the mid-14th century. So this is the 1300s CE, and what is meant by the term science is terms like what is known, knowledge of something which you have through studying the thing. So you have observed the thing happening. It is also synonymous with words like information, and also, peripherally, the assurance of knowledge, the certitude or the certainty of something being real or factual. Coming from the Old French, science relates to knowledge, learning, also the application or the corpus of human knowledge. And by corpus, we mean the collective, all we can know. In the 12th century, so the 1100s, Common Era, Latin scientia equals knowledge or a knowing expertness, and it comes from scientis, which means intelligent or skilled. Skilled meaning that somebody could present you with something and you could build it expertly, right? To know. Something to call out here is the distinction that the Greek sometimes has the episteme or episteme. And this is methods for affecting practical results. And this is the theoretical truth. So when we're talking about science here, this is the observable thing. This happens when we do this. We write that down. That is observed science. But before we go further in this, science is always evolving. In Freemasonry, we have the seven liberal arts and sciences. These sciences span the gamut. They're not just limited to the seven that we have. Those are really umbrellas under which several hundred, maybe even thousands of disciplines exist. Infinite, really. So when we think about the science, what is the science? Well, sometimes people say science and religion are the same things. They are describing the same instances, the same paths that things take. And maybe that's true to a sense, but science has something that's a little different because we are effectually able to change science with further investigation or observation. Science is not static. It changes. Our ability to recognize the change and to continue to look at the changes increases the accuracy, the understanding of the world around us, something we are called to do in our Fellowcraft lectures. But science is also based on our human and, today, computerized observations. So as Werner Heisenberg once said, that what we observe is not nature, but nature that is subject to our questioning, or our version of questioning, our method of questioning. In other words, what we comprehend, for instance, we create a ruler and make marks. Then we say this rock equals so many marks long. And from there, we develop our measurements, our observations, and we write these things down. We kind of invent the method by which we ask questions and observe nature around us. It's 100% human-based. And that, in and of itself, is interesting. And it got me thinking a little bit about science and the debates that have been happening over the last, 3 years probably. And I came across a great piece here on the Philosophical Society's website. And it's called The Science Debate by Kristen Wilson Slack. If her name sounds familiar, she's a contributor to the book How to Charter a Lodge, a no-nonsense unsanctioned guide. But the science debate is her article, and I'd love to read that for you now. So the science debate, Kristen Wilson Slack, published February 10th, 2020. One would think there is no debate about science. The scientific method is, quite simply this, a method of procedure that has characterized natural science since the 17th century, the 1600s, consisting in a systematic observation, measurement, and experiment in the formulation, testing, and modification of hypotheses, questions. What I find extremely interesting about this statement is the use of the word nature, or rather, natural science. It bears noting that natural sciences are those sciences which have to deal with the physical world, astronomy, physics, biology, geology, etc. In other words, it is a study of, you guessed it, the natural world. At a recent Masonic Philosophical Society meeting, they discussed the impact of humanity on Earth's physiology, or ecosystem. Many armchair scientists spoke up and theorized on the state of our globe's atmosphere. One person noted that there is a quote-unquote layer of bacteria in the atmosphere and that this could be the cause of some of Earth's climate issues. Skeptical as always, I wanted to know more. Using the internet and what I hope were reputable sources, I determined there is not a quote-unquote layer of bacteria. But viruses and bacteria do get swept up into our atmosphere and in some cases may be able to thrive there. There is no indication, however, of their impact on Earth's changing or evolving climate. The activities I undertook to understand what someone was saying were also a topic of this very same discussion. We have many ways of obtaining information, and while the internet and search engines are helpful, they are not the end-all of research. When libraries and bookstores were the norm, the person doing the research had to know the topic area, perhaps some reputable authors or scientists, and then searched and read through information to find data to support or deny whatever message they were researching. Now, it is slightly backwards. We're provided the data quickly, but with little background on who or what produced this data. While the tools may have also made the data easier to find, we have become less able to do actual research. In a recent airport visit, I watched a big story about a man who became fascinated with seahorses. He moved to California from his native Iowa, and during a dive in 2016, he spotted seahorses in the Long Beach Harbor. He became fascinated with the creatures and now averages 1,500 miles per year driving and diving up and down the coast of California to study seahorses. He is not a biologist or a scientist of any kind, yet over time he's taught himself to start taking data, creating biomes for these creatures to study them, and become one of the foremost authorities on seahorses. Why? Because they fascinate him. He is passionate about them. Dare I say, he loves them. We normal humans have become subjected to being fed science and rarely make the time or have the passion to study a single piece of nature. We might find flowers beautiful or animals majestic, but we move right back to our computers and away from the natural world. When we get into the world, we begin to understand it in a way that computers and spoon-fed data can never provide. Rather than find a path to learn, we are mortified by not knowing and become fearful. We look for information to make us feel better to generally support our suppositions. We do not gather data based on an observation or theory like our friend above, nor do we really obtain knowledge. We lack understanding. We take what we hear and return to the world around us, a feedback loop of information that is consumed but not subsumed. Why is science, a respect for science, important? For two reasons, I believe. The first is our ignorance of true science, of true nature, ignores the facts of the world around us. It drives us away from being of nature, when in fact we are nature. We lose context and disseminate false information. Fake news isn't fake because someone simply lies. Fake news is fake news when we perpetuate it without solid understanding and investing in personal research. We then make choices about how we live, how humanity thrives based on misinformation. The second reason true learning of nature is important is because understanding nature stops fear and anger in its tracks. Understanding the larger cycles of Earth, geologic cycles, helps us understand better what is and is not human impact. It complicates what we want to be simple, but it complicates it because it is complicated. Nature needs to be understood by our individual selves, otherwise we're not really learning. We are part of this great body of animal, mineral, and vegetable. We are made of stardust and earth, of air and water. We are electrical and chemical. So is the world around us. If we seek to understand the universe, we are really seeking to understand ourselves. Destroying this ignorance destroys fear and hate. While I think we should question everything, I am not so sure there should be debate about science, about its existence and use in our lives. There should be no debate about nature, about physics or chemistry, no debate about exploration, nor about the extrapolation of research. We should all become our own scientists in this world, curious and intuitive, passionate about life. Humanity isn't separate from nature. Humanity is nature. And thus, we study nature. We study ourselves. We learn. We grow. We become better. Kristen Wilson Slack. Totally awesome piece. I loved it. You know, she even provides some great little graphics here about the scientific method. I'll have a link back to the website as well as this particular article, again, coming from February 10th, 2020. My Craftsman Plus question for the science debate is not including this particular debate on things like COVID or vaccines. In your life so far, I'm curious on a time when the science of something impacted your life, when there was a debate about it. So maybe this is whether in the 1980s they were debating on whether eggs or butter was good for you or margarine or whatever. I'm just curious on what we've all lived through in the debate on science. Maybe for you it's been the climate science or something along those lines. Or what has it been? What trials and tribulations have we all experienced in relation to the acceptance or denial of a scientific report? I look forward to hearing your responses. And while this really kind of centers around the climate debate, is her example in this piece, we can really use it to better understand how we feel about a lot of current things, you know. I'm dancing around the issue, of course, but I'll just say it, is, you know, the issue of vaccines and masking and all of these things. This is the science that the world is really just digging on right now, and where news sources and terrible news sources are coming after your minds. And on the topic of COVID-19, I have to throw a huge shout out here to Brother Michael R. Pohl, who I mentioned earlier and who will be streaming into our Scottish Rite Education Day, the Double Eagle Con 2021. Mike Pohl released a video not long ago to his YouTube channel, to the New Orleans Scottish Rite College page, and he released this video, and it is a really, really great video, I have to say. What is it? Okay, well, the video is about the question of if those who refuse the COVID-19 vaccines are in violation of their Masonic obligations. That is a hot, hot topic. Some would say that is divisive, and I shouldn't even have mentioned it on this podcast. I'm not going to tell you what I think. I just think his video is awesome. It takes a real strong person to put something like that out, especially in the divisive world that we live in currently, thanks to Facebook. But in any case, I'll put a link to this video in our show notes also. I hope you do check it out. I hope you listen to Mike, and you know, leave him a comment. See what you think. But that's it for this week. I want to thank you all for joining us and getting some great education this week as we talked about science and what science is and how we are science, how we are our own scientists, how we can study the sciences just like we're charged to do in the Fellowcraft degree to understand nature around us. Very, very important. And I hope Greg Knott's piece really got you thinking about what you're going to be posting online in the future. You know, we tackle this stuff all the time. But if we want the world to truly be better, we need to be Freemasons. Oftentimes, we are not being Freemasons in the interim between meetings, and we need to be. And that includes in a digital space. What if we could be the example, even online? I'll talk to you all next week. Until then, stay on the level. From Whence Came You? I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.